right, welcome to the Young Turks. Jane Huger, Anna Kasparian with you guys. I've made a bit of a pledge to try to be nicer to Republicans. They are going to test me today. Okay, so we have a story that will greatly test me.
I got news for you. They're gonna test you every day.
They really are. Okay. So, another interesting part of today's show is we have the story that will determine if there has been any change at all in Congress, or if it's the same old, same old. We don't have the answer today, but we have the thing that will decide the answer today. So lots of interesting things in today's show. So I got a great idea. Why don't we start it and let's see what happens?
Yes, let's start with literally the most important story, not just of the day, but probably of our lifetimes. Yeah. And it has to do with climate change. A new report by the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change indicates that the global temperatures are actually set to rise beyond the global limit of 1.5 degrees Celsius. That was the limit that was agreed on during the Paris Climate Accord. The results of that are going to be absolutely devastating, but more importantly, the ramifications that we're already experiencing in this rapidly warming climate has already been incredibly devastating. So the outcome of this report indicates that we need widespread, rapid action in order to mitigate some of the most devastating impacts of climate change and at least slow down the rapid nature of the climate warming. So as Dr. Frederick Odo from the University of Oxford said, he's one of the authors of this IPCC report, climate change is not a problem of the future. It is here and now and affecting every region in the world. The findings of the study indicate that carbon pollution has risen to such extremes that a key threshold in the fight to stop climate change, and that's limiting global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius or 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit by the end of the century, will be crossed within 15 years. So I want to go to this video, which features the environmental reporter for the German outlet Deutsche Welle, and he explains what this report means in greater detail. Let's watch.
So what's the message then to governments around the world?
So world leaders pledged the Paris Agreement in 2015. They pledged to limit global warming to well below 2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial temperatures, and ideally to 1.5 degrees Celsius. Now this 1.5 degrees C target, that's going to be broached in the next 20 years or so. And in all the scenarios that they consider, that these models kind of look at, in all of these scenarios, except for one of them, they stay above 1.5, they keep getting worse. And the one in which we do manage to bring things back down by the end of the century and kind of meet this 1.5 degrees C target, that involves rapidly decarbonizing the economy and sucking enormous amounts of CO2 out of the atmosphere. And governments so far aren't doing that.
None of which we're doing.
Now, the key word there was governments, because this isn't just about the United States, although the United States has failed miserably in responding to climate change and changing human behavior. But this is something that we need collaboration on. This is something that we need to work with other countries on. And with the United States failing to even do its part, things are looking pretty grim, because we need rapid action and we need it now. We need to decarbonize right now. And honestly, we're barely even headed in that direction.
Yeah, he sounded a bit like Dr. Strange there talking to Tony Stark. I run all the scenarios. There's only one scenario in which we win. But unlike the Marvel Comic Universe, in the actual human run universe, we're screwed. We're not gonna do that scenario. What does that scenario involve, by the way? Nearly ending all fossil fuels. We gotta go. We have to stop right now. Now, of course, in America, because half of our politicians are paid to manufacture doubt, and our media feels under some obligation to call things 50-50. They've gotten better on climate change, so they're calling it 75-25. They have manufactured enough doubt through their propaganda for you to go, oh my God, end fossil fuels, that's crazy. I mean, there's coal jobs in West Virginia. There's like, you know, what we would have more jobs if we switched to solar, that's a fact. They would pay higher, that's a fact. But you never heard any of that. Oh my God, you're gonna cost jobs in West Virginia and Ohio or wherever else. That's, there's no way we can do that. No, you're not getting it. Here in America, we're in a bubble. We're literally in a propaganda bubble. The rest of the world gets it and they can't believe we're not taking action. Unfortunately, some of the powerful in other countries like China barely get it because it's all about short-term profits, short-term gain. Meanwhile, we are unquestionably burning down the planet. But again, I go back to my wife's comment on this. The planet will be fine. It'll shake us off and then it'll recover and then new life will spring. But we're endangering our own existence in such a material way that they will look back at this time in history and go, that was stunning. It shows you the incredible power of human greed. It just is unstoppable, even when we're facing our own extinction.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad that you mentioned China because China, of course, is part of this equation. So is Russia. So in China, you know, they rely heavily on coal. In Russia, there's a reliance on natural gas, which of course emits methane into the atmosphere, which is incredibly, incredibly dangerous and only further accelerates climate change. And look, we're seeing the consequences of climate change today with wildfires, not just in the United States. I mean, in Turkey right now, the wildfires are out of control.
Yeah, the fires are out of control. I'm not sure how naturally occurring they were in Turkey.
Right.
With 12 fires seemingly lit in 12 different places at once. So,
I didn't know that.
But we're not positive about that. It's a complicated international issue. But once they start, of course, they're very hard to control because of climate change.
Right.
And so, look, I know. Everybody's got their own agenda. So the Chinese blame the Americans, the Americans blame the Chinese. You mentioned Russia, people scream Russiagate, right? And everything will be blamed on American imperialism and sometimes on the right things, right? So is it runaway capitalism? Yeah, it's partly that for sure. Because the stock market says, what are you talking about? I want 15% growth every quarter, every year. I don't care. I don't care how you get it. And you will be judged on short-term profits. So it is incredibly hard to get off that treadmill. And power never concedes without a demand. And apparently our demand has not been sizable enough and forceful enough. Mm-hmm. And I mean politically, of course. And look, there are people like progressives, like Justice Democrats in Congress that are demanding it. This is gonna connect to another issue we're gonna talk about later in the show, which is the $3.5 trillion budget deal. They used to call it the infrastructure deal, but now people are playing politics and they're calling it the budget deal. Anyway, the bottom line is it has a little bit of Green New Deal in there. It needs to have a lot of it, but hey, it's a really good start. If we don't do that deal, then America is saying we're out.
Yep.
It doesn't matter if it's a Republican or a Democrat. We're never gonna do anything. We're obsessed with money. We're obsessed with donors. We will take no action and we will actively burn down the planet. And by the way, including the state of California, the most prosperous state in America is now being burnt to an absolute crisp. And it happens because of the same things. Corporate donors from PG&E giving money to politicians so they never regulate them. Climate change has made the trees like literal tinder and dry tinder. Siberia is on fire. We're all in great, great peril, but when you tell look, last thing on this for me. When you tell right wingers in this country, and again, if you live outside of America, it's hard to believe, right? But if you tell them here that 99% of the world's scientists agree, it is definitely man-made, right? And we can show you the graphs here to prove it, right?
Let's put the first graph up.
Yeah, it's definitely real and it's definitely man-made. They say, no, we don't believe in your stinking numbers and scientists are evil. And so we have to debate them on whether science is real before we can take action on this graph. Look at that graph, that it has already happened.
Yeah, for those of you who are listening to the audio version of the show, you see this massive spike in rising temperatures or rising climate. In the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. So beginning in the mid 1800s specifically, you start seeing that graph spike up, which obviously it shows the clear connection to human behavior. And real quick, I also think it's important to just quickly mention the methane component of this, because the report specifically focused on moving away from coal, but also moving away from drilling for natural gas, which is what emits methane into the atmosphere. They find that as the world shifts away from fossil fuels and tackles air pollution, those aerosols will disappear. There are certain aerosols that it's pollution, but it helps to reflect the sun's light, so the planet doesn't warm as quickly, right? But as we start dealing with fossil fuels, some of those aerosols who kind of, you know, that have that effect might also disappear. So that might seem counterintuitive, right? But while also improving the air quality, said IPCC report summary author Maisa Rojas Corradi, an atmospheric scientist at the University of Chile. Now, on a global scale, methane emissions are responsible for around 30% of warming since the pre-industrial era, and that's according to the United Nations. So what they're saying here is, look, methane acts a little differently because it remains in the atmosphere far longer than CO2, right? It has a similar impact, but it's harder to get rid of from the atmosphere. So they're talking about how you need to do something about fracking, you need to do something about drilling for natural gas, because that's having a far more severe negative impact on the environment than previously known. That was the other finding of this report.
So I want to add one thing to that and then show you the second chart that I was alluding to. A lot of the methane is trapped in the Arctic ice caps. And when the ice caps melt, the methane then goes in the atmosphere. You cannot get that back and put it back in the ice caps. The damage becomes irreversible. And it's, again, not in the future, it's happening now. It's happening now. So we're totally screwed. So let's show the second one. We already showed you the chart where it's going through the roof. This is similar. But the blue line in this chart shows you what would have happened if human drivers were not taken into account, what the normal pattern would have been given everything else that the planet is experiencing. The red line shows you what humans have done. And so, but yet, people see these kind of charts in America and they say, I think the thermostat is lying. I think scientists are making up numbers all across the world. And they just don't believe it. And there's no getting them to believe it. So we're frozen into inaction because the oil companies and coal companies purchase our politicians in America. That's bribery is legal. And then they manufacture doubt in enough of the electorate so that they can maintain their seats and their power. So $3.5 trillion, that's the deal. If that deal doesn't pass, honestly, the entire planet is screwed.
Well, speaking of the planet being screwed, let's take a look at the Dixie Fire, give you guys an update on that. The massive Dixie Fire in Northern California is now the state's largest standalone fire in history, as it spread to more than 700 square miles just over the weekend. The fire has destroyed small towns in the region, several of them, including Greenville and Canyon Dam. And as of August 8th, the fire destroyed or damaged at least 589 structures, with 14,000 more threatened as a result of this fire. Now, it's important to talk about what sparked this fire, but before we do, of course, a huge part of what has exacerbated the fire, what has led to the conditions that's made this fire so disastrous and difficult to contain, is of course climate change. Now, as of late Sunday night, it had scorched almost 765 square miles south of Sacramento. That's more than 2.5 times the size of New York City. It's been burning for 25 days and was only 21% contained. And I just want to talk a little bit about how dry the conditions are, because as we've talked about on the show before, the West is dealing with a drought right now. It is a severe drought, and that creates conditions that are perfect for this kind of fire, for a fire that's completely out of control and difficult to contain. In fact, Mark Burton, who is with the California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection, says, quote, the live trees that are out there now have a lower fuel moisture than you would find when you go to a hardware store or a lumber yard and get a piece of lumber that's kiln dried. So basically firewood, the live trees are drier than literal firewood. It's that dry, so it doesn't take much for any sort of embers, sparks, or small flaming front to get that going. And what sparked this? Well, I'll give you more details in just a minute, but just know that the private utility company PG&E and its awful equipment, which they have failed to upgrade for nearly a century, is likely to have sparked this fire. So another fire that has destroyed entire communities that has been sparked allegedly by PG&E, and I'll give you more details to that in just a second.
So corporate negligence is leading to the fires, and corporate negligence and malfeasance and corruption is making the fires worse. So the first half is through the utilities, and the second half is through the fossil fuel companies donating to politicians for inaction. So the largest fire recorded in California history is last year. The second largest is this year. And by the way, it's only 21% contained. So we'll probably beat the record, unfortunately. And the 20 biggest fires in California history happened in the last 20 years, almost all of them. So climate change is not only real, it's here. It's not later, it's right now. When fires wipe out whole towns at a time in the most prosperous state in America, what would be, I think, the fifth largest economy in the world, one of the richest places on earth, and we're powerless to stop the fires because it's Mother Nature and it isn't playing. We have no chance at stopping these fires. And have we made enough money in California? Yes. Is it ever enough for the greedy? No, it's never enough. I'm gonna make another $1 billion, fossil fuel executives and shareholders say. Meanwhile, everything's gonna burn down. Look, in the last, or one of the sets of fires over the last couple of years, the Kardashians, they weren't alone, but they're a flamboyant example of it, started hiring private fire departments for extra protection for the rich, because you know the rich are burning down the planet. So it's okay, they can save themselves with extra privatized fire departments. And the rest of it, Greenville, you couldn't save yourself because your entire town was burnt to the crisp.
No, what's incredible about this is you're right in that the largest fires in California history, the 20 largest fires in California history happened over the last 20 years. We know that this continues to be a huge problem. So climate change is an issue. Privatized, deregulated, greedy private enterprise is a problem, clearly. And then you got the third issue, right? And the third issue is that we don't have enough firefighters in California.
That's a great point.
And that is not a mistake, that is by design. Because the state of California would rather rely on prison labor in order to fight these fires. You literally have prisoners on the front lines fighting these fires. And this is how California saves money. Why are we gonna hire enough professional firefighters to deal with this? And by the way, those people, those prisoners who later get out of prison and they wanna be firefighters, they can't, they won't get hired. They won't get hired because they have a felony on their record. That's the sick system that we're living in. But I want to tell you more about the sick system. Because as I mentioned, PG&E, a private utility company, is likely to blame for what sparked this latest fire. And prosecutors have launched an investigation into PG&E's involvement in this Dixie fire. Because the fire is burning parts of Plumas and Butte counties, both are involved in this investigation. Butte County prosecutors successfully convicted PG&E before of starting the campfire and of 84 felony counts of manslaughter as a result of that fire. Now, PG&E actually ended up reporting to the California Public Utilities Commission that its equipment may have been involved in the start of the big Dixie fire. And earlier this year, PG&E vice president said on camera the PG&E power lines started the 2019 Kincaid fire, which injured 4 people and destroyed hundreds of homes in Sonoma County. Cal Fire also said in a report this year that the deadly Zog fire in 2020 was sparked after a pine tree hit PG&E distribution lines. These lines should obviously be underground. The fact that they're above ground is a huge problem, that's very clear. But PG&E isn't gonna spend the money necessary to update their equipment and do the right thing. You would need regulation. You would need actual leadership on a state level to make that happen. Are we gonna get that state leadership? Of course not. Gavin Newsom has taken campaign contributions from PG&E, so have the Democratic lawmakers in this state. But don't worry, PG&E and Gavin Newsom want to ensure that you don't focus on them. And you know, I always wondered, why does Gavin Newsom talk about climate change so much? I mean, he clearly doesn't care about climate change because he keeps allowing for more and more permits for drilling. right?
Over 8,000 so far.
Over 8,000, exactly. The reason why he wants to focus on climate change is because that's his way of deflecting from his personal role in allowing PG&E to get away with murder, literally. I mean, it's insane.
Well, there are three culprits, and I'll run through them quickly. First, one of them is triggered by a comment in our member section. Go to tyt.com/join and do the show with us. The good doctor wrote in, I get that the planet is on fire, but Mr. Potato Head and Dr. Seuss. So that's culprit number one, is the right wing, who says, don't worry about it. Worry about Dr. Seuss books.
Mr. Potato Head.
Exactly. And so, and when you tell them, look, 99% of the world scientists agree about climate change, they go, no, science is garbage. Tucker Carlson and Donald Trump have it all figured out. So that's the folks we're dealing with here, and that's why we're frozen into inaction. Now, but let's go over to the Democrats. They're just as bad in a lot of ways. There's good progressives now that are Democrats that actually do care, and they don't take any corporate PAC money. So they're the only unbribed politicians in this whole country. They're the only ones, that's why they're the only ones fighting for us. But the corporate Democrats, which is the majority of Democrats, are horrible. Gavin Newsom is an excellent example of that. He goes and takes a hero picture in Greenville after it's already burnt to the ground. And he's like looking like this into the distance. You know, he's doing blue steel into the distance as if he cares. And Greenville will be with you. No, it's too late. Greenville's gone. What do you mean we're gonna be with you? Your buddies at PG&E burnt it to the ground. There is no more, hey, we'll be with you, Greenville. It literally doesn't exist, okay? So why do I say his buddies at PG&E? Throughout his political career, Gavin Newsom, a Democrat, has taken $10 million from PG&E. Those are all bribes, and they got exactly what they paid for. They got a corrupt politician like Gavin Newsom that let him get away with, if we're being honest about it, murder. They were convicted of it. So it's not hyperbole. In this case, there was a conviction that the PG&E's negligence led to the deaths of those 84 people. And now more people are dying. And yet, when Gavin Newsom was asked about all the campaign donations that he's taken from PG&E and the non-regulation that he's done of them, he's let them run wild.
That's right. He bailed PG&E out.
Guys, you have to understand something. You can't have the wires out. It has to be buried. You can't have them on the post that we have now, right? Trees fall on them, and in this case, in this fire, it looks like a tree fell on one of the wires, which is literally the most predictable thing on earth. Everybody knows. That's why in Europe they bury the wires, right? And PG&E says yes, but that'll cost me a little extra money. And what cost me less money is bribing Gavin Newsom and almost every other Democrat, and certainly all the Republicans. That cost me a lot less money. And corruption works. And so now the last culprit is the media. Did you know, other than our show, that PG&E had bribed Gavin Newsom $10 million? Does anybody else call it a bribe? No. Very few outlets that report it say it's campaign contributions. It's okay. Supreme Court legalized bribery, so it's okay. It's not okay. It's not okay. When those corporations give a politician money, especially that much money, every actual person knows that's a bribe. Why is it that our media are the only ones who purposely lie to you and say, no, it's not a bribe? No, Gavin Newsom is not at fault. Gavin Newsom is a wonderful, amazing Democrat who cares about climate change.
Look, he's talking about climate change. He's such a good guy.
Yeah, why do you go along with his fraud? Today he's out there sweeping up trash that the homeless left behind, I believe, in Berkeley, okay? And again, hero shot. He's like throwing away garbage, and he's like, yeah, man, blue steel the whole way. Mm-hmm. And the press doesn't go, hey, you schmuck, you're the one that caused this mess. They just put it out there like, oh, Gavin Newsom, he is helping so much with the homeless and with climate change because he said so. And I work for him, so I wrote it down. So they, all of you are tricked into it. By the way, as we say this now, Gavin Newsom's in the middle of a recall effort. And if the press gets word of what we're saying, they will yell at us and say, oh, I guess you're trying to hurt Democrats, huh? Hey, idiots, you're in the press. You're not supposed to be partisan. You're giving away the game, okay? We hate that game. We don't play that game. That's why the media can't stand us. They're like, how dare you say that about a beloved Democrat? Well, I just said it. He's terribly corrupt, and he's gotten himself into this mess of a recall, which isn't gonna make anything better, because if a Republican comes out winning, the situation is gonna get even worse. And that's the state of America and California as we have it. If you hear anything else from the mainstream media, as usual, they're lying to help the powerful.
We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll give you an update on where we're at with the bipartisan infrastructure deal and also the reconciliation version of that deal, which Cenk rightly called the now budget deal, because that's what they're calling it in Congress. So we'll be back with that story and more. Stick around.
Hey, back on TYT. Really important stories in today's show. Including, there's a hilarious one about Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz, but really important ones on infrastructure and lobbyists. But first, Anna's got a quick correction.
Yes, we were talking about the IPCC report on climate change, and I mixed a few things up, but I wanted to make sure that I clarified any misinformation. So when you're looking at CO2 and methane, they both, of course, contribute to climate change, but they're a little different. And the report did dive into that and also give some clarity on how important it is to move away from methane as well, or habits that release methane into the atmosphere. So look, while methane and CO2 warm the atmosphere, the two greenhouse gases are not the same. A single CO2 molecule causes less warming than a methane molecule, but lingers for hundreds of years in the atmosphere, whereas methane disappears within two decades. But with that said, the report does suggest that it's incredibly important to move away from methane causing activity as well. The report puts a lot of pressure on the world to step up its game on methane. Cutting methane is the single biggest and fastest strategy for slowing down warming.
Okay, it just roughly speaking, methane is 80 times more potent than CO2. But as you can tell, as Anna said, CO2 lasts longer. That's a correction. If we were other parts of the media, we of course wouldn't do that. We'd say, no, China hacked into the methane. And we've got it right all along. That's what MyPillow says.
I know, but we never get credit for anything, so it doesn't matter. Let's just move on.
Okay, that's right. Well, you know what? Methane wouldn't come on the show. So we had to say what we said.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
All right, well, let's give you guys an infrastructure update. Over the weekend, the Senate pushed the bipartisan infrastructure bill over another hurdle. And of course, that is the legislative filibuster. Now, that requires 60 votes in the Senate in order to pass any piece of legislation, with a few exceptions on reconciliation bills. Now, senators easily overcame another 60 vote hurdle on a vote of 68-29. As many as 20 Republicans are expected to join Democrats in the early or evenly split Senate for what could be a robust final tally. If approved, it would go to the House. So I want to be clear in stating something that I hope we've been clear on so far. The Senate infrastructure bill, the bipartisan infrastructure bill, is different from what's being referred to as the reconciliation infrastructure bill, or what some are now referring to as the budget bill, which we'll get to in just a second. But moving back to the bipartisan infrastructure bill, which of course allocates an additional $550 billion in new spending. The Senate could pass the $1 trillion bipartisan infrastructure bill as early as Tuesday of this week. The plan, which calls for $550 billion in new spending on transportation, utilities, and broadband, is expected to get through the chamber with Democratic and Republican support. Now, it didn't pass easily, or this overcoming this hurdle did have a few hiccups. So I'm just gonna go to one video featuring Ted Cruz and the shenanigans he engaged in, where he thought he was making a good point, but as usual, only embarrassed himself. Let's watch.
As Admiral Akbar said in Star Wars, it's a trap! This is a trap. This is a trap. Now listen, for Democrats, it's what they campaign on. If you're a Democrat, you want to raise taxes and raise spending. You want more debt from China. That's what Democrats do. But for Republicans, come on, guys. We're like Charlie Brown with Chuck Schumer being Lucy in the football. And you've got Republicans happily running, going, oh, he's going to keep the football. He's going to keep the football. And every time Lucy pulls the football up back, and we go up in the air and land on our rear. It'd be nice for Republicans not to fall for it again.
So Ted Cruz feels that this is a trap because voting in favor of the bipartisan infrastructure deal paves the way for the passage of the reconciliation infrastructure bill, which includes everything that we actually care about. The human infrastructure components, funding for childcare, elder care, free community college, the honestly more robust version of the infrastructure deal. Now, Cenk, I wanted to get your thoughts on what Ted Cruz said there, but more importantly, like this strategy. Like, do you think that Democrats are handling this appropriately, right? There seems to be this notion that they're definitely gonna pass a reconciliation bill, but I don't really see a clear strategy, with the exception of progressives standing in the way, saying that they'd block the bipartisan bill unless there's a clear path forward for reconciliation. What do you think?
So good news is we're gonna find out everything about Congress real soon. Okay, so I'll explain. First, I want to say about Ted Cruz. I'm really, like, Anna's the salt queen, right? But I've also gotten to a point where I'm tired of covering the liars. So everything Ted Cruz says is a lie, and I don't want to engage with the mainstream media that says, oh no, that's offensive. You have to take his lies and take it at face value and pretend that it has 50% chance of being true and has validity. It doesn't have any validity. And he's a showman, and a terrible showman at that. He's such a poor, great actor. Republican voters can see it from a mile away. Trump is a far more sophisticated con man. So as Ted Cruz does these kind of speeches, even the Republicans don't buy it. They know he's a scam artist. So anyways, now on to relevant things. Look, there is one point that the Republicans are a little bit right about. So we do an honest show. So we'll cover no matter what, as it actually is. So they're doing two different infrastructure bills. They were both called infrastructure bills. Now the larger one is being called a budget bill. That's a bit of optics that the Democrats are doing, okay? It's harmless optics, but it is optics. It's not, it was infrastructure, it is still is infrastructure, and it has more of the Green New Deal in the larger one that's now being called a budget bill. That part is true, okay? And so why are they doing two different bills if the Democrats can pass the larger one without any Republican votes? So that means instead of doing 1 trillion and 3.5 trillion, they can just combine it if they have enough votes and just pass it as 4.5 trillion. So the 1 trillion, there's two possible explanations, and neither one of them is good for the Democrats now. So the Republicans are right that splitting it is weird, right? And some of the ones that are opposed to it go, why the hell are they splitting it? They're gonna trick you guys and they're gonna vote for the $3.5 trillion. Well, they're not tricking you, they're saying they're gonna vote on the $3.5 trillion one. Okay, it's actually a trick in the reverse for on Democratic voters, okay? So I'll get to what's most likely, but second most likely is they say, well, it's okay, we helped the Republicans with their marketing by doing a bipartisan one. Now it also helps Joe Biden's marketing, that's why he's presumably doing it, because he ran on being bipartisan. But the Republicans will get to say, we did the infrastructure bill. We did infrastructure, okay? Now, the reality is it lets them vote against 75% of the funding for infrastructure, but it still gives Republicans credit for doing infrastructure. Mm-hmm. So that's a giant marketing help to the Republican Party. That's totally needless if they can pass a larger one with only Democratic votes. That's inarguable. Anyone in the media that tells you that's not inarguable literally can't do math, right? So that's the best case scenario where the Democrats, as usual, help the Republican Party massively for no reason. Okay, now the worst case scenario. No, the most likely thing is the Democrats never meant it. They're just as much corporate stooges, their leadership is, as the Republicans are. So they're gonna actually do Lucy and Charlie Brown and pulling the football. Oh yeah, progressives come this way. We're gonna vote on $3.5 trillion. Sure, it's gonna happen. Oh golly gee, we couldn't get Manchin or Sinema or any of the other rotating villains to say yes. So we can only do the bipartisan one. So everybody shut up and do unity. And we're all gonna yell at you and say you're the worst and it's all your fault. Mm-hmm. If at the very last second, and they'll always leave it to the last second, so it'll seem like an emergency, right? The progressives didn't vote for it, it's their fault. So that is the most common game. And so what we're all gonna find out together, we don't know it yet, you're all gonna find it out as we find out. If the Democrats actually pass the $3.5 trillion one from the Senate, and then the House passes it and it becomes law, holy cow, we've actually moved Congress and progressives have made a difference. I would love to give the Democratic Party credit for that. I would love it. It would be literally the first time in my lifetime, in covering politics for 25 years, I have never seen the Democrats mean it. Never, not once, okay? So if they mean it this time, that is a giant victory and you should give credit where credit is due. Now, if it's like every other time and they pull the football and they don't do the $3.5 trillion deal, that is when you will hear mainstream media do marketing for them. Propaganda, pure, worse than anything on Sputnik or anything that you see, like the North Korean television, they will tell you, oh no, we couldn't have done the $3.5 trillion. Everybody always knew it was not gonna be the $3.5 trillion. I can't believe progressives are preventing the $1 billion infrastructure deal. It's all the progressives' fault. They will all say it in unison. And the other good news is I don't care what the mainstream media says anymore. My job is to point out their lies.
So devil's advocate, Democrats now referring to the reconciliation infrastructure bill as the budget bill could be optics on behalf of the Democrats, because of course, in order to pass a reconciliation bill, which would only require a simple majority in the Senate, you need to prove that it has an impact on the federal budget, right? So calling it a budget bill helps with that cause. Some red flags though that I wanted to mention is that you already have the Congressional Budget Office studying the impact of the reconciliation version of the infrastructure bill and pushing back a little bit in regard to whether or not it would qualify under the reconciliation process. But I want to be clear about something. The whole thing about reconciliation and the Senate parliamentarian, the Biden administration does not have to listen to the Senate parliamentarian, someone who is unelected, someone who can just easily be fired. And the administration and the Democratic Party can move forward with the reconciliation bill and get it passed with a simple majority. The fact that we're already hearing about like, oh, well, the CBO is looking into this and we don't know we don't know if this $3.5 trillion now budget bill is going to qualify for the reconciliation process. We'll see how it plays out. But Nancy Pelosi on multiple occasions has said that she will not bring the bipartisan infrastructure bill for a vote on the House floor until the Senate passes both of the bills, meaning the reconciliation bill and the bipartisan bill. We'll see if she's actually gonna follow through on her commitment there. Yeah. But there's that commitment, and then there's also progressive lawmakers in the House who claim that they'll block the bill. You're right, Cenk, there's gonna be a tremendous amount of pressure on them to not block the bill, to play along and to do whatever the corporate media and corporate donors want them to do. There's gonna be a lot of pressure, but this is the true test to see if they're willing to go through all of the disdain, all of the hatred that they're gonna get in the corporate media to do the right thing, which is to block the bipartisan bill unless it's abundantly clear that they can pass the reconciliation bill.
Okay, guys, everything is on the line and everything's gonna be decided. So Anna's absolutely right, calling it the budget bill is a good thing because budgets must pass, right? So that's an indication that they actually wanna pass it. Now, in the past, I would have told you there's no chance they're gonna pass that $3.5 trillion bill. If the corporations are not in favor of it, we live under 100% corporate rule. It has no, I would have said 0% chance. Now, I'm not telling you that now, okay? I'm telling you that there is some chance they pass it. Why? One, Bernie is saying 1,000 times over, it's gonna pass, and that this was the fruits of all of his labors and all the compromises. Now, if Bernie gets fooled on that, that is going to be devastating for him, okay? Mm-hmm. And so on the other hand, if he passes it, guys, people like me who were his critic on $15 minimum wage, et cetera, we all have to turn around and go, holy cow, he did it. Like I've never seen it in my lifetime where corporate Democrats agree with progressives rather than vice versa. Mm-hmm. Okay, and what Anna said about Nancy Pelosi is critical. I've never seen Nancy Pelosi draw the line like that and say, I will pass progressive legislation, and if I don't, you should judge me on it. I've never seen it. So we're in unprecedented, uncharted territory. So it does have some chance of passing. But if it doesn't, if it was all a trick all along, and the progressives fold, and Nina Turner lost, then we're back to a dark place where there's no hope at all. So the progressives cannot fold. If they fold, it would be devastating.
It would be devastating, not just for the future of their, you know, political careers, which I honestly don't care that much about. It would be devastating literally for the planet. Like, the reconciliation version of the infrastructure bill is the one that includes climate action. We need to address climate change. I mean, we need to go even further than what's in the reconciliation bill. But the reconciliation bill is a good start. And if they don't fight for that, I mean, it's just gonna, the future is incredibly bleak. By the way, the reconciliation bill, as I said before, includes everything that we actually want. So it's expansion of paid family and medical leave. You've got childcare programs, free community college, an extension of increased Affordable Care Act subsidies, universal pre-K. You, again, like, it's important to address how expensive education is for people. So free community college is a good start, although I would like to see it go further. But all of the human infrastructure stuff is included there. The extension of the child tax credits, we need this. We need to give Americans relief. This is finally a little bit of redistribution of wealth to the bottom instead of a redistribution to the top, as we're likely to get with the bipartisan version of the bill. Look, honestly, if progressives block the bipartisan bill because we're not gonna get the reconciliation bill and we get nothing on infrastructure at all, I would almost prefer that. Because the bipartisan bill is nothing but corporate handouts. There's some positive spending there for infrastructure improvements that we need. But we're privatizing public infrastructure through this. These are all the, you know, physical infrastructure things that corporate America wants because it benefits them and their bottom line. So no, we need the reconciliation version of the bill. That's the bill that has everything that we need, everything that we want. We should be hyper focused on fighting for that.
So last two things on that. One of the reasons why there's also a little bit of hope is because the money is moving. Always follow the money. And so large Democratic donors now are beginning to understand, uh-oh, the planet is burning. And we don't have a second planet. And so now this actually endangers me helping the other people. Who cares? But look, I might have billions, but I don't have enough money for this. By the way, bad guys and good guys, right? I know a good guy who's very wealthy and is now literally, he's given up on politics and he's a scientist. He's seen the numbers, there's no question about it. He's now going to go and move and buy tons of real estate as far north as he can and start building bunkers. That's real, okay? And that's a good guy who tried and tried and tried to fix it and thinks, nope, it's broken. We're not gonna be able to fix it in time. You gotta start preparing for worst case scenario. Now, if enough donors thought that, they might actually be able to push the Democratic Party in the right direction. That's why it's not hopeless. But at the end of the day, what is the most likely outcome? The most likely outcome is the same outcome we've seen for the last 40 years of corporate rule, which is, and this is an important part of this, guys, they're gonna try to run out the clock while pretending there was nothing they could do. So when the $3.5 billion version of it comes up in the Senate, that's when Sinema will object, and then they'll go to the CBO, and then they will take tons and tons of time negotiating back and forth. None of it is meant to actually do negotiations. It's just meant to run out the clock. And then at the end, they'll go, oh my God, we're running out of time. So we gotta pass the trillion dollar version, the smaller version, the bipartisan version, and then we'll come back to the other one. We promise. We'll come back to the other one, right? And that's the oldest trick in the book. So what you will see with your own eyes as they start to run out the clock, and that's done on purpose.
We're gonna take a quick break. When we come back, lobbyists are big mad at the Biden administration for extending the moratorium on evictions. We'll give you their whiny statements when we return.
All right, back on TYT, Cenk and Anna with you guys. Lots more stories, let's do it.
Well, the real estate industry is very upset with Joe Biden and the Democrats. after shelling out millions of dollars to bribe Washington to end the eviction moratorium, the National Association of Realtors and its allies are furious with the Biden administration for caving to progressive lawmakers, specifically Cori Bush, by extending the eviction moratorium. I love this story. Very rarely do we get to drink the tears of rich men who thought that their legalized bribery would work. And I love celebrating actual progressive action that leads to incredibly important protections for worker for people in their homes who are facing eviction. But obviously more needs to be done. So thank you, Cori Bush. But let's talk about how these lobbyists are now crying. The industry felt whiplash, said National Association of Home Builders CEO Jerry Howard, whose group includes about 3,000 property managers impacted by the original moratorium. He said this, and this is probably my favorite quote. It certainly is a slap in the face to the housing industry and to the people that shelter America.
Yeah.
Okay, let's pause for a second. This is a slap in the face to the very people who shelter America. I mean, we want to evict these people during a pandemic, but we shelter America, everybody. We shelter America. We're the good guys. We're the good guys. We shelter America. Let me give you more.
Okay, hold on, yeah, I got a comment
go
on
ahead.
That. You're literally trying to unshelter them. On this issue, you're trying to evict them, and there's a moratorium to stop your evictions. And you have the nerve to put out a statement saying, oh, now they're not going to let us do evictions when we're the humanitarians that shelter
yeah,
you.
Yeah.
No, no, the whole point of this is the unsheltering. But they have no shame whatsoever. But this story is amazing, guys, because it tells you exactly how politics actually works.
It is pretty incredible. And it's one of those rare instances where in an outlet or publication like Politico, you get these lobbyists who just say it like it is. Then they're very transparent. Like Cindy Chetty, for instance, she's the senior vice president at the National Multifamily Housing Council, which sounds incredibly lovely, but it's not. She said that the odds were stacked against the industry as outrage over the ban's expiration snowballed. And then she said this, we did lobby a lot. We did step into gear. I'm not sure there's anything else we could have done. I feel comfortable that we did everything we could. And what did they do exactly? I mean, shelling out literally millions of dollars to lawmakers, to the Biden administration to end the eviction moratorium. The Realtors PAC contributed nearly $2 million to House Democratic candidates in 2020 alone. And that includes $10,000 a piece to Maxine Waters and Nancy Pelosi. And what was also fascinating about this story was how incensed everyone was, including, I don't know, I got the feeling that even the reporters over at Politico were like, what's going on? Because Maxine Waters takes these bribes from the very people that we're talking about here. And she happened to be one of the Democratic lawmakers who was, you know, fighting to extend the moratorium. Now, I want to be clear, Cori Bush was the progressive lawmaker who essentially made the Biden administration bend to her will. And I really respect that and I love that. But Maxine Waters was also speaking out about the need to extend the moratorium, regardless of what she was receiving from these corporate donors. But look, that is an exception to the rule. Every single time we do these types of stories, the money talks. Because they're legalized bribes, that's all it is. So Cenk, you wanna jump in?
Yeah, I can't love this story enough. First, The political angle is really interesting because what they're doing here is they're reporting on the gamesmanship of politics, which is Politico 101. That's what they do. So they're stating this as a loss for this particular lobbying arm. They're like, it's like almost all the other lobbyists are making fun of the real estate lobbyists. They're like, oh, the drug company lobby got everything they wanted.
Right.
The oil company got everything they wanted. Look at the loser realtor lobby. They couldn't even get what they wanted. And that's what Politico is reporting here. That's why, I mean, these quotes are amazingly honest because they're just reporting on the game. And they don't think, they're not commenting on the game like, oh, isn't that outrageous that these lobbyists buy our government on a regular basis? And they're outraged the one time that they were foiled.
Mm-hmm.
So here, I'm gonna give you a couple of quotes. So that same Cindy Chetty that Anna mentioned is senior vice president at the National Multifamily Housing Council. said the, this is, I'm quoting Politico, said the odds were stacked against the industry as outrage over the ban's expiration snowballed. The outrage is not from American people. The outrage is from the lobbyists. And they genuinely mean it. They don't think it's weird to say, I'm outraged that politicians actually represent the voters for once. Outraged. And Politico's like, oh, that's a good point. This is outrageous. Let's note that the lobbyists are outraged that democracy broke out. Thank you, Cori Bush. All right, now on to Maxine Waters that Anna mentioned. Listen to this telling quote, because here, you could actually take this story and say, look, Maxine Waters took their money, but then voted against them, or was ready to vote against them. And so you can give Maxine Waters credit, credit where credit is due, right? But her quote is telling. So forget Maxine Waters. Listen to what the quote says. She said, now I know that there's a strong lobbying effort and the realtors have come and they have put a strong letter out last night. And some people are saying, quote, oh my God, I don't want to cross the realtors. Now that's Maxine Waters talking to fellow Democrats. She is relaying what she finds to be perfectly normal. People in the Democratic caucus saying, oh my God, I don't want to cross the realtors. They don't find that to be a remarkable statement. They find that to be very normal. Oh, I don't want to cross the lobbyists, that might hurt me. I would normally screw over my voters on behalf of lobbyists, and that's why I'm concerned. And Maxine Waters here is kind of doing a good thing, saying, don't be too concerned. Don't worry, we have other lobbyists, okay? But put that aside, again, I give her credit. Hey, don't be too concerned about the lobbyists, because normally you would be. That's the assumption that every Democrat has. Forget the Republicans. The Republicans have always been against the eviction moratorium, are always on the side of the real estate interest and every other lobbyist group. And notice she also said they put out a strong letter. Now, it almost sounds like Trump, right? Mm-hmm. They put out a strong letter, okay, it was very strong. Now, why is she saying it that way? Because when the lobbyists put out a letter that's strong, they're saying, you better watch yourself. We're not gonna give you the millions of dollars anymore. Mm-hmm. That's why Democrats in the caucus are worried. That's why the Democrats actually never voted on it. That's why Cori Bush had to do the protest, because they were never going to vote on it, because the realtors put out a strong letter.
That's right. And I want to give you another figure, because it gives you a sense of just how powerful this lobbying group really is, especially compared to one of the most influential lobbying groups, and that's the US Chamber of Commerce. So the National Association of Realtors has some of the deepest pockets in Washington, as Politico reports, shelling out nearly $700 million to influence policy since 1998. The spending puts it behind only the US Chamber of Commerce. So that's look, when we talk about housing in America, when we talk about how the system seems to be rigged against working Americans and their shelter, this is what is at play behind the scenes. This is the kind of legalized bribery that takes place. This is what shifts policy against working Americans. And so it's an incredibly powerful lobby. And so, I mean, that also speaks to Maxine Waters and how she does deserve credit for being on the right side of this issue, given how powerful this lobbying group is.
Absolutely. And so I'm gonna read you the last two quotes here, because this article is amazing. And there's assumptions built into the article is amazing. I'm gonna go back to the first paragraph, because it's gonna relate to the Joe Biden quote I'm gonna read you. They said, President Joe Biden's stunning decision to revive the eviction ban in response to intense pressure from progressives has left one of Washington's most influential business coalitions feeling angry and betrayed on the sidelines of power.
Oh, did you spend a lot of your money to bribe the politicians and it didn't work? Are you angry?
This almost reminds me, I'm gonna make a very curious analogy, of Bridgerton, okay?
Okay. Didn't know where we were going there.
Yeah, I'll tell you why. Because it feels like one of those things that the high society writes. Like, oh, gossip in high society. Ooh, the real estate lobby has lost influence. Ooh, they are not going to get a good suitor this year. Everybody in the lobbies, in real estate lobby is going to be punished. They feel betrayed by Biden. They thought he was going to do everything that they want. They assumed, like every other lobbyist, that Biden would do everything that they wanted. Mm-hmm. That's why they're feeling angry and betrayed. And it's left one of the most influential business coalitions in a tiffy, okay? And again, that's just reporting Politico, winners and losers, ha ha, you lobbyists weren't corrupt enough. or your corruption didn't work well enough. Now, we get to a killer quote inside the article. They say, in the case of evictions, lobbyists even had Biden's word that the ban was done, only to have the president abruptly backtrack.
Betrayal.
Wait a minute. That's the lead, you buried the lead. So this whole time, the Biden administration has been pretending, oh no, we're in favor of the eviction moratorium, but golly gee, there was nothing we could do. Kavanaugh whispered something in a case, and so we didn't have any choice, but Biden didn't want to do it, right? But wait a minute, we just found out in Politico, as an aside, he had promised the real estate lobbyists that he would end the moratorium because of the money that they gave the Democratic Party. Now, did Politico make note of that and go, oh my God, Biden has been lying the whole time? No, they just assumed that's normal. Of course the president was lying.
It's normie behavior.
Yeah.
Right?
And is Jen Psaki being asked about it, hounded in the White House press? No. She got one question about it last week and then she's done with it. And she said, oh, I give Pelosi and ourselves credit, not Cori Bush, because we were always gonna do it. No, you weren't. Now it's proven to be a lie. Is there gonna be any accountability? No, the press will keep on pretending that Joe Biden has the positions that he claims to have, but never actually does have, because secretly he's been promising the lobbyists, don't worry, I'm gonna deliver for you guys. And why did any of these plans get foiled in the first place? Because Justice Democrats stood up and said, no, we say no. And so Cori Bush, and you guys go back and watch the video I did the night Cori Bush got elected. I said, this is a real person and she's gonna make real change, because she's not one of them, she's one of us. And she did. And what did I tell you about AOC sit-in? I said it was the best thing she's ever done, because that's how you actually get power, by getting the media attention, influence, etc. And they've got to do it and create that kind of good trouble over and over again, because it actually works. They tell you not to do it in mainstream media and in Democratic leadership, not because they're worried it isn't gonna work, but because they're worried that it is going to work. And it did work in this case to have real progressives fight and win. And by the way, as I've told you for 20 straight years now, the only way to win is to fight. Power never concedes without a demand. If Cori Bush had not demanded it, these lobbyists would have been high-fiving, drinking champagne, and Politico would have written an article about how great the real estate lobbyists are in killing American dreams.
All right, we got to go to break, but that does it for our first hour. We come back for hour two. We'll talk about what the latest updates are on the possibility of Andrew Cuomo, governor of New York, getting impeached. And also, one of his accusers has now spoken out publicly about what she dealt with when she was working as one of his aides. Come back, we've got that story and more for you.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Young Turks. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur, and I'll see you soon.